Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Well, Christmas has come and almost gone. Almost gone. Still, decorations are up all over the city. The creche, the nativity scene at 59th Street and 5th Avenue is there live, big and live. Some celebrations are still going on. The decorations are out there. But the one of the first signs in my neighborhood, in a city neighborhood, is of the beginning of the end of Christmas or the end of Christmas is that Christmas trees start to appear on the street at the curb. You know, sans ornaments, just plain old Christmas trees. And it's a sad thing to see in a way. I mean, you get upset about the fact that all these trees are being cut down. Originally for, you know, for people to put up in their apartments and their houses. And then almost as soon as Christmas is done or for a couple of days afterwards, people keep them. And then they take down the ornaments and take away the decorations or whatever is underneath the tree. And they just toss the tree out in the trash. And the trees can stay there sometimes for weeks, many, many weeks, piled up. It's a nice smell in the city, a little pine smell. But it's a sad sight to see in a way. I mean, all those trees sort of fell for the pleasure of, chopped down for the pleasure of people for a week or a couple of days or 2 weeks and then tossed out. And it takes the sanitation department some time to get around to it. But still, there are a lot of decorations. I think people start taking down their decorations from the front of their houses now, right now. But a lot of decorations on Fifth Avenue where all the stores are. they spend so much money on them, they're still up. And they'll be up probably straight through to New Year's, and that's when everything changes. But Christmas is really come and gone, mostly. The anticipation of and the dread, the anticipation with joy and dread, with some mixture or maybe unalloyed in one direction or another, depending on what your life was like when you were growing up, what your family's like, of seeing your family, of traveling to see your family, and the spending, all the tremendous billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars in spending, ordering online, spending in stores, giving people too many presents. Some people feel like they didn't get enough presents, all the giving and the receiving. The best and the worst of that, you know, whatever the motivations are, and people spending more money than they have, and but people want to be generous. They want to give people things that they want, and it's a big holiday for most people in this country. It's the holiday for big presents and generosity, right? The idea of generosity when it's not it's too commercial, and it's not competing with other people, and it's not people just buying something expensive and tossing at somebody. It's generosity, you know, considering who another person is, what they might really want. And of course, the spiritual meaning of Christmas, you could say it's at its height then, but it's not, of course. If you're a religious Christian, the whole meaning, the spiritual meaning of Christ's birth, generosity and charity, stays with you or should stay with you, right? Something you take away from the holiday or that you keep with you. And then there's this strange lull, you know, this odd, because kids are off from school, anything from preschool to straight through graduate school. Schools are closed, and a lot of people are on vacation this week from their jobs. And it's a strange kind of a lull between Christmas or the day before Christmas and New Year's. And when New Year's comes, you know, there's this frantic celebration on New Year's Eve, and then New Year's Day comes, and the long, hard trek of life without extra celebrations, a life without presents, a life, you know, just the grind of schoolwork and regular work, and your life goes back into its regular groove. So there's this this strange, lull between the long road that opens up every year. And every year it's like this. It's like a kind of suspended animation. When I was coming down here today, and the studio's sort of lower midtown in Manhattan, usually extremely busy. Putting busy is a mild word for it is around here. Crowded to the point of insanity sometimes. I mean, thousands of people on the streets, crossing the streets. But it's very thin right around now. This is a week when things are thin, that people are off from work or away traveling or just taking a break from the long work of the year, right? The tourists are still here. The tourists, this is still a week for tourists. And so they're all around. But there's far fewer people, which makes it a kind of more peaceful. The time after Christmas is more peaceful in the city. Maybe it's that way in the suburbs too. I guess I don't know. But this odd lull, and it has all this stuff. What happened during Christmas and about Christmas, and this lull here, has me reflecting on the idea of what home is and what family is, because this is what happens around the time of Christmas. During Christmas, there's so much coming and going, right? I mean, the whole country is on the move. This gigantic migration from one city or suburb to a city, or a city to a suburb, or state to a state, or people coming in from overseas who have been traveling to visit. Everybody coming home or leaving their homes to go to another home, to their original home. So much coming and going. And America, in a way, was sort of founded on people migrating here or emigrating here from other places. I mean, even going all the way back to the original inhabitants, the Indians, came from some other place. from probably over the land bridge, which was still around in the Bering Straits, down into what is now Alaska, and then straight down through Canada and into this country. But it's a country of migration, of different giant waves of migration. It's a traveling country, almost a kind of and people, I think that's still in the blood of a lot of people in the United States. Although, you know, a lot of people came here from other places, and they were used to having one settled home for countless generations. And they took that, and they traveled here. But just the idea that some select group of people in any different place traveled here, that kind of DNA is brought over to the country, that kind of traveling, almost nomadic feeling. In America, the great country of cars and highways and traveling back and forth and drifting and not staying in one place. But finally, you know, after the country got older, generations settled in one place or another. But there's so much. During Christmas, everything seems to be coming and going. The traveling, arriving and departures, arriving at airports and departing, and all the traffic on the road. My kids came in from my grown children. One's 35 and one's 30, and they live in different cities, and they have their own families now. Their family being, in this case, just their husband or wife. They don't have kids yet, but they will establish their own larger families eventually. So my kids come in, and they come in to visit their mother, who is actually my ex-wife, and me and my current wife. And you know, we have dinner, and they come over and they hang out for a while, and we talk, and we give some presents. They give some presents, but it's a sad feeling in a way when they have to leave. You know, you get so, you know, I didn't want them. You don't like to see them go when they're young, anyhow. You don't like to see them go. I mean, it reminds you of other earlier departures. I mean, they come, and one of my kids especially doesn't really want to be where she's living for various reasons. I mean, she likes her life that she has there, but she doesn't like the actual city she's living in. And my other kid, he likes where he's living pretty well. But I remember when they come, and then when they, you know, I see them again. And of course, when you see your grown kids, and you're a parent, you see through that, not a facade, but you see through the grown kid, you see the little kid, and you see yourself again with the little kid. And all of it comes back to you, you know, all those old memories come back. And you think of the other earlier departures, you know, the first day of school, and, you know, when kids start to go out with their friends, and when they go off on their own and come and go and travel on their own. And then when they go off to college, which is a really big thing when you have kids and they go off to college for the first time. And then later on when they come home, you know, holidays, they come home and visit. But then finally, although a lot of kids are living home now because there's no jobs, after college, they move back home. Or if they've been working and lost their jobs, they move home. But the usual was, up until the last few years, that kids would go off. A lot of kids would go off to college in another place. And it was a sad sort of empty feeling. They call it empty nest feeling, an empty feeling. And unless you have a good solid relationship with the person you're living with, or a good solid marriage, or you're just simply happy within your own self, you know, you're satisfied and settled and good with yourself, it can still be a kind of a tearing, empty feeling, you know, because these little kids who depended for their entire lives when they were born. I mean, they would have expired without you for the first several years of their life. And then later on, you know, they more and more they're independent, but and they make these forays into the world, and their identity changes, and they get more solid themselves. But it's a sad feeling when my kids, you know, came and went again. You know, they stuck around for a couple of days, and then they were off. And after that, it was time to go up. And I've been doing this for 25 years. My wife and I took a cab to Grand Central Station in Manhattan, which is, you know, the picture of insanity. Everybody hurrying around, anticipation, People running lest they miss their train to some, northern suburb. Because you take trains from Grand Central and go all the way to Canada there. And you travel there when you're at Grand Central Station. It's all the trains north, not west or south to the rest of the country, which is at another place in the city. But the trains here travel north to New England, and then what we're doing is going up to Connecticut. And we've been going up there for 25 years, 25 years now. I've been going up there for 25 years. My wife, wherever she has lived, has been going up there her whole adult life since she moved out of her house something like 40 years ago. But it's a tradition, right? And, of course, it's her home. It's where, for the 60 years of her life, she knows this place is called home. Her parents have moved a couple of times during the course of those 60 years to different houses for various reasons. But this is where she's been going. This is what she calls home. And her family is there. And we've been married together for close to around 25 years. And I've been going up there, too, at the same time. And, of course, you go up there and to New England, and that's when you experience, if it was a normal world, seasonally speaking, if the weather was normal, if it wasn't so weird and odd, you go up there and there's fireplaces. Her parents always had a fireplace or a couple of fireplaces. And, there might be snow on the ground and it's cold. And that's what you associate if you live in the Northeast. If you grew up in the Northeast or in mid-Atlantic states, you'd associate that with winter. But this year, I don't know what it is. It's El Nino or something, or maybe some combination of that and global warming. It's bizarre and ominous and a little bit sick. It's strange, the weather. It's very strange. And I associate this kind of weather, since I grew up in New York, in a suburb of New York, I associate snow, cold weather, and Christmas. They all go together with me, the Christmas holiday. But this year, one time I went out to Los Angeles during Christmas time, or right before Christmas time. And that was a strange sensation, because it was bright and sunny. People are driving around with open convertible top cars and their short sleeves, and yet there were Christmas decorations all over the place. That was bizarre. But now, the same, a similar thing here. It wasn't 70 and 80 degrees, but it was actually over 70 one day. It did set a record. It was 72 degrees the other day. And everything is sort of upside down and backwards. The trees were budding. The trees were budding the way they look like in late March. They were actually you could see the buds ready to come into leaf. And some flowers had blossomed. Some flowers had blossomed. Today, it's a cold day. It's more of a winter day today. But it's strange. I mean, so where are these seasons? And when you don't associate, maybe if you live in some place where there aren't so many seasonal changes, but in the Northeast, there are tremendous seasonal switches. And now they seem to be sort of stood on their head. They're all strange. So we go up, to Connecticut to the family. And it's going on for a long time now. And her father died several years ago, and her mother is getting older now. Some of the family, her siblings, she has a few siblings, but they didn't come down they live further up in New England. They didn't come down. So it was kind of a small, low-key Christmas. And you can feel it. Everything is kind of changing. You know, there are losses, there are changes. And I was thinking, I don't know how many people listening to me, took a trip to see their family, or even if it wasn't locally, even if it was a 10-minute car drive, or if you got on a plane or something. When you go and you visit your family at a holiday time like this, at Christmas time, you look at your family and you see them aging. You see, some people who aren't there anymore, and you see little kids who have been born, and so little kids are running around, if there are little kids running around. You see changes, and you start to measure your own life. You look at everybody else's life there, and you start to measure your own life. You measure your whatever growth you may have had, and hopefully you did, emotional growth, your capacity to be aware of yourself, just your own aging, mortality, the different stages of your life, and you measure yourself more clearly, or it tends to stimulate an assessment of yourself. I mean, not that you might not be doing that all the time, but you really do that when you're with people that you spent your whole life with, that you grew up with. And I've been with these people for 25 years, so there's some of that with me. But so my wife is, this is her family. She knows them forever. And some of them aren't there anymore, and others have gotten older. And there are changes in people's lives. People have moved to different places. So you measure yourself that way. And you keep wondering, what is home? What is a family? For me, it's always been a very, to her and to other people, if you grew up in one place and you had one, whatever your family was like, but they sort of stayed in one place. And maybe if they moved around, still they were a family unit, if they were a family unit. And and then the house where they live, or the apartment or whatever, that they might have lived in for a long time and that you've come to visit, or maybe that you were born in, that's your home, right? And this is your family. But when you don't have that, and as a lot of people don't have that, I mean, that's like an ideal or a perfect ideal. When you don't have that, like I didn't when I was growing up, you always feel a little uncertain about what a home and a family is, especially since my home and my family were not places that I identified with security and comfort and safety and anything like, and love, anything like what you would experience, what you hopefully would experience in your home and your family. So, but when people travel, there's this, you could feel it on the train on the way up to Connecticut, on the Metro North train, and you could feel it in Grand Central. There is a subdued, slightly anxious feeling. I mean, not everybody is glad. Everybody is looking forward in one way to going home, and dreading also, or not anticipating, good times when they go home. This is, there are movies and there are books about this, home for the holidays, You go back with your family, and sometimes, and this is sort of part of the natural continuum of growth, right? Sometimes you had to turn your back on your family to grow up. It depends, what your family was like. Sometimes they encouraged you through certain stages of development. You want to grow up, but you don't want to leave the home. You want to get away and be yourself, and you need to do that. But then, you get scared and you may come running home for help. And little by little, if it works out the way it's supposed to, then you develop a self. But no family, of course, is a perfect example. So there is this combination, this strange feeling of looking forward to seeing the folks at home, if your parents are still alive, or, go and see your siblings, who you may not see very regularly if they live in different places. But also, all the old feelings come back. When you go and visit your family, suddenly you start acting in ways you thought that you had gotten over acting that way. That you weren't going to be like that anymore. You thought, with all the with all of your own successes and all your own growth and challenges, maybe you had therapy, maybe you just came to these awarenesses yourself. But as soon, I know people who were, people who were in their 60s and 70s, that if they still have their parents alive or they visit their family, they feel like they're being yanked back into childhood, and all the old rivalries start, and all the old, if your parents are still around, they will still be the way they are. They have not changed. And you go home, and no matter how old you may be, how mature you may be chronologically or emotionally, it tends to take you back, and you feel nervous about it. And you're afraid you might fall back, possibly, into that way of being again. So there was a lot of that mixed feeling of anticipation and anxiety at the same time on the train. And then, everybody's got that. And we stayed at a motel, which we have been staying at for many, many years. There's not quite enough room at the house. Some of the other siblings stayed there. It's a very nice little place up in this town in Connecticut. You know, all Christmassy, everybody there is into the Christmas season. Everybody there is visiting. There are people there visiting their parents from other states and other places. They're coming back home to Connecticut to visit their family. And it's a nice, you know, a good class motel. And I always feel comfortable in motels. I always like hotels and motels. Maybe why is that? Because there's no responsibility. You know, I'm not in a place where I have to relate. And there I am with my wife, but I don't have to relate to other people who I have difficulty relating to. I don't have any work in front of me. My computer's not there. All the my regular schedule is lifted. I'm away from that. I don't even bother to check. You know, not that I have a smartphone that I could check anyhow, but I don't even bother to use their computer in her mother's house to check what my emails are. You know, you just take a break from all these things. And I always liked because my feeling about home was never good. My house and my home were not a place that you would call a home. My house was not a place you would call a home. It wasn't a place you go for refuge and love and comfort. And since I grew up this way, and I didn't leave my house till I was 21, my childhood home when I was 21, I have never really felt at home. And even though I've been in different apartments and with different people and had different kinds of family situations and lived in different places, I have never felt at home. And every time I'm in a place where I live, I almost treated it like it was a refuge or it was like a motel. I would just come and go. It was a staging area, a place where I slept, a place where I just, I dropped my clothes and I picked them up and I went out again. You know, the outside was someplace I always had to go when I was young just to escape, to get away from the craziness. And so it's been a shame in a way, because a lot of people who I've been with, a lot of women I've lived with, and then, you know, families I've been in, invested a lot into, you know, the home I lived in and made a home out of it, because they were used to feeling comfortable at home and establishing a home. But I never felt that way. I always felt more like a nomad wandering around. And so when I go on these trips, I like staying in these hotels and motels. I actually rest better and feel better. And when I'm in my own home, I don't feel as secure or stable, which is a sad reflection. And I work hard on it. There have been times when I felt more or less that way. But I do like to travel and stay in these places that are not firmly rooted in responsibilities that I have. I guess that's what it is. Anyhow, so it's more like the nomad feeling inside me.
You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one. I know you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you hurt you somehow. Don't you drive the queen. It's always your best friend. Well, it seems to me surviving's been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can get. Desperado, oh, you ain't get no younger. You're home. Freedom, well, freedom's just Some people talk while your prisoners walking through this world all alone. Don't you think you're caught in the winter time? Sky won't snow and the sun won't shine. It's hard to tell the nighttime from the day. Come down from your fences, open the gate. It may be raining, but there's a rainbow above you. You better get somebody love you. You better let somebody love you before it's too
home and family, home and family, home and family. When I always borrowed a family. I always had to borrow a family. I didn't have, you know, obviously there was nothing that resembled, as far as I could tell, a family in the house I grew up in. So I always borrowed whatever family was available for me to borrow. My, like, for instance, my best friend as a kid, came from or was a very religious Southern Baptist. How did they arrive in my neighborhood? His father sold cotton, was a salesman for raw cotton to the garment center businesses in New York City. And he was assigned to this area by a very large cotton-selling company. And when I was growing up in Laurelton, Queens, this is the neighborhood. The neighborhood I lived in was a very mixed neighborhood. It was... the old neighborhood was almost entirely Christian. It was essentially German Lutherans, but there were some Methodists too. There weren't too many Catholics, and there were hardly any Jews. But after World War II, there was a migration from the inner city, and a lot of Jews moved in. So it was a mix of Jews who were the newer residents in the neighborhood and. The old-timey residents who were mostly German Lutherans and who would put up a lot of Christmas decorations. So Christmas was a big thing here and there, you know, where the Jewish residents lived. There were no Christmas decorations, but then so it was a kind of a good balance. And my best friend was, as I said, part of a family where they were religious Southern Baptists. His mother was originally from Mississippi. And his father from Texas. So they had Southern accents, and they were very Southern in their ways. My grandmother, who came from Eastern Europe, she hated Christians. She hated Christmas. She hated Christians for many what she considered and other people would consider good reasons. She came from a place where there were pogroms, hatred, bigotry, murder of Jews en masse by various European populations. And she was generally okay, my grandmother, but when it came to Christians, she would refer to them as, use a Yiddish word, and she would had this utter look of contempt and disgust on her face. Goyim, or filthy Goyim. She would encourage me not to hang out with Christians or ever to go near a church, that kind of thing. But it didn't, you know, I mean, I had, like, you know, on the other hand, she understood that where I lived, my mother's house, was no home at all. And there were no, you know, ritual celebrations that counted for something where the family came together and crystallized and all these feelings of love and generosity and charity were expressed. So on Christmas, I would go over to my friend's house for Christmas. First, I would go over there and we would decorate the tree. And they really decorated their tree. I mean, you know, some people put some ornaments here and there, and you know, but they had all these old family ornaments, which people unpack. And this is back in the 50s. And because he had all this cotton, we would take raw cotton and spread it along. And this took a long time, but it was a really wonderful thing to do. They spread it along every branch of the tree, so it really looked like snow had fallen on the tree. And I loved doing this with them. So they let me decorate the tree with them. There was no question of, you know, preaching to me, you know, preaching the gospel to save me from my my horrible anti-Christian ways. But, you know, so my grandmother didn't mind. And they were really, you know, it was a really nice family, especially my friend's mother. And they put tinsel on the tree. And I've never seen any of these kinds of things before. And I loved doing it. It was so much better than the kind of, you know, we weren't religious at home. So Hanukkah, although it's a wonderful, beautiful, inspiring holiday, no Jewish holiday was celebrated, really. And we didn't really have much of a Jewish education or celebrate Jewish holidays. So we had a few gifts here and there, and we had a small little menorah with candles. But it was nothing compared to Christmas presents and to the beautiful music and the Christmas trees and the decorations. So I was sort of drawn to that. And they put up cotton, and it looked like snow. They put up tinsel, and they put up these beautiful ornaments. And these, some old-fashioned, no doubt, would be considered unsafe. They don't sell them anymore. But there were these old-fashioned ornaments that at the base, they were, I don't know, like an inch and a half or 2 inches long. And there were tubes of liquid. I don't know what kind of liquid, but maybe water. But they would heat up. There was an electrical connection to each one, and they would heat up, and bubbles would come up. Bubbles would come up into the tube. So it was just fantastic ornaments. And then on Christmas morning, they would let me come over there and open presents with them. It was such a wonderful thing to be in this family. I had to, you know, like adopt this family. And the toys, fantastic toys. They were Lincoln Logs. You know Lincoln Logs? Do they exist anymore? Lincoln Logs, they were new then. You know, you unpack the Lincoln Logs. I call Lincoln Logs because of Abraham Lincoln. Came from a log cabin, you know. I don't know. Grew up in a log cabin someplace. But there were logs with, you know, with grooves, slots in them. And you could build all kinds of cabins and different, you know, structures with them. So they were great. Sorry. I got a little water here. And forts. There was a bit. There were all these forts. You know, Fort Apache or whatever. And cowboys and Indians. Completely politically incorrect, of course. This is the 50s. And at one point, somebody got a BB gun. And there were cap guns and BB guns. And why, if they were religious Christians, were there guns there and cowboys and Indians? Well, who am I to say? But they were Southerners and they were Westerners. And guns and hunting and whatever ancestry had dealt with the Indians still was alive in them. They came from a place like that. So so there were caps and cap guns and, you know, forts and cowboys and Indians. And they gave me some presents, you know, not extra ones that they didn't want. But they actually, you know, wrapped up a couple of presents and gave them to me. And I loved it. I loved it. This was my borrowed family for years. And I felt very sad when my friend moved away when he was 16 years old. We first met each other in elementary school when I was about 9 or 10 and got to be friends. He lived right down the block, about 5 houses away. And like I said, my grandmother, you know, she understood that I had, you know, that my mother's house was a crazy place and there was no really family tradition. So it was fine with her if I went over and did this. I mean, I'm sure she had to swallow a lot seeing me hanging out with Christians, with the Goyim. But, you know, what's the difference? It's all the same goddamn God anyhow, right? It's all the same God. It's all the same. And if it's good, it's good. If it's benevolent, right, it's all about charity and about generosity and about peace and about turning the other cheek, you know? I mean, what could be bad? What could be bad? Anyhow, and thinking about these, I was just thinking about these Christmases at these places, at my friend's house, and all the decorations and the Christmas music was on, and you know, all the great presents and the cowboys and Indians. And, you know, they say when people get older, and now I'm officially old, I'm 70 years old, that they have a little trouble, they start to have trouble with their short-term memory, but they have more and more vivid memories of childhood. And I do have more vivid memories of childhood. I mean, I remember the cap guns and the caps, and I remember toy soldiers, I remember the marbles that we bought, and I don't just remember them, I could see them. I could feel them. I could smell the cordite, you know, the black powder in the caps. And you buy a small box of caps and you unroll it and you open up the part of the cap gun and you put the roll of caps in and then you thread it through a certain place and the hammer of the cap gun would come down. The caps didn't always go off. I mean, they were cheap, right? And they were this dark red. Dull red paper, and I remember going into Woolworths and buying toy soldiers. This is so long ago, they were made out of lead, toy soldiers, and painted. And, of course, they were all World War II soldiers. This is right after the war, or a few years after the war. And I also bought marbles there, and this is before cat's eye marbles, if you go that far back. Does anybody play marbles at all anymore? Do marbles even exist? I don't know. But the marbles they sold then, you could pick them out individually, and they were in these big boxes in Woolworths, this department store. And they were like precious gems. They were just the marbles were beautiful. They were like midnight blue. They had flecks in them. Or they had flaws in them, and they were absolutely beautiful, beautiful things, incredible things. And I started to remember all these things recently, looking at the toys. There were no little kids up at the Christmas celebration up in Connecticut. Sometimes there are some little kids there, but this time there weren't. So there was no toys unpacked. But all this stuff about recollections about Christmas brought back all these memories I had of, and then I remember my bicycle when I was a kid. This thing I saved up for, it was a red and silver, a red and chrome Schwinn middleweight bicycle. And it was in the window of some toy store, and I saved up a long time on snow shoveling money, on grass cutting money, got a little investment from some relatives, and I bought this bicycle. And for me, the bicycle was a big thing because it was a way I escaped from my house. Like, people might jump on a horse and get going, right? The whole idea of got to be moving on, right? Well, my house was always a place I wanted to get out of. My family, which barely was a family, was a place I needed to get away from. And the bicycle was my escape. Bicycle was my escape. I remember that. And I loved that bicycle. I polished it all the time. I oiled it. I think it had one of these rubber bulbs, horns, whatever it makes. Ooga, or whatever. It didn't have any, like a little silly little bell. That was for girls, you know, the little bell. But it had a loud bulb, rubber bulb attached to a metal sort of megaphone device, you know, like a horn. And, I love my bicycle. And the whole idea was, you know, of going over to my friend's house was to get away from my home. And I felt so at home. And theirs was a real home. that was a real home, right? And I wanted to just stay there. I never wanted to come home. There were times when my mother, even during the year when I was over there hanging out, she'd have to call up and get them to send me home to my house, rather. The best Christmases I ever had, and there weren't that many. There should have been more, but that was my fault, was when I was married to my ex-wife, and we had our kids, and they were young. And then we bought a tree. I bought a tree. And it was my own family. It was my own family. And I bought, you know, a tree, and my daughter would come with me. It was very cute. You know, she would hold up the top part of the lighter part of the tree, and we'd go down to Broadway and pick up a tree, and I'd have the heavy part. And she was helping, very earnest. She was, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever it was. And she was helping me hold the tree and carry it back home. And I love this this family I had that I created myself. You know, that I was not the head of the family, but I was an actual father, and there was a mother, and there was children, and it was something that I was in charge of. That, and so our apartment got decorated really nicely for Christmas, and everything was in its right place: the mother, the father, the children. But and I had a therapist once who said that the family you grow up in, he said, you have to love the family you grow up in, whether you like them or not, or whether you hate them, you have to love the family you grow up in. But what's harder, what's more of an effort, and what is more, in his opinion anyhow, what is more true love was the love you feel later on for somebody who is a stranger to you. When you meet somebody and you get together with them, or you marry them, and then you have kids with them, that kind of love was much more difficult, and much more really, in his opinion, that was really sort of what love was. It wasn't compelled. It wasn't a duty. It wasn't something that you felt that way. Of course, my own kids, you feel it, and you feel that old feeling in reverse. I mean, I love my kids, right? No matter what they've done or how they've acted, you just love them no matter what. And but I was too much of a child to maintain my husband and father role. Couldn't maintain it, and I didn't stay in that house as long as I should have and left. But, and then, you know, when I left there, I got remarried afterwards, and my kids came over to visit there. So we'd have a tree in my new house with my new wife, and we had a tree set up, and the kids came over and exchanged presents. But it wasn't exactly the same thing. It wasn't the same thing. But those, I have to say, those, when I didn't go to the extent of having to borrow somebody else's family, when I had created my own family, I wish that I had held on to it. But I did for a number of years, and I do remember that as some of the best Christmases I've ever had. But when I was a kid going over to my friend's house, or going up to Connecticut all these years, it's basically borrowing somebody else's family, which is fine. You know, I'm grateful for anything I got. Talk about gratitude during a charitable or a generous holiday season. So finally, after a few days up in Connecticut, this weekend on Saturday, we came back and we left. And there is that, you know, that feeling of leaving a family again, right? That feeling of leaving a family. In this case, it was a borrowed family for me. But for my wife, it was a very, very profound thing. It always was. When we went up there every Christmas and we went back to the city to leave her mother and father, especially as they were getting older, there was a feeling of, like, just a tearing feeling in her. And sometimes she would she'd cry on the train on the way home and feel very sad to leave them, right? And when we left and we got back to our, but she said, at least, you know, we're going to our own nice little, snug little home. And I wish I felt the same way about home that she did. I mean, she grew up in a home where there was love and there was caring. Yeah, there was troubles. Every family has troubles. But it was a secure place. It was a family. It was a home. And so we're going back to our place in the city where I've lived with her for about, for more than 20 years now. And, but I have still never really considered any place that I live my home. Never. Even when I was married to my ex-wife and we had the kids, I still didn't consider that my home, even though it was closest thing I ever had to what I consider a family of my own. Didn't consider it my home. I guess the way I grew up, I always feel, and maybe it's my nature. Some people are more nomadic. They cannot stand the idea of being home or staying home. But so when we got back and we came into the city and we got back and we opened the door and we unpacked and everything. And, you know, it feels good to be back in a place that you're familiar with. And for her, it's a stronger feeling. For other people I've been with, it's a stronger feeling. But for me, it's just another place I live. It's another place I live. And it's sad. It's sad. And I have tried very hard to invest myself from time to time. And I've succeeded from time to time in making wherever I live or whoever I've lived there with
into my family, into my home. But I think probably because of the way I grew up, or maybe it's something in my nature, I've never really quite felt at home. But and I keep wondering, after all these experiences that I've been talking about, and from the past, and coming and going, and Christmas, you know, what is a family? What is home? Well, obviously a family can be the family you grew up in. I mean, a plain old family, mother, father, siblings, whatever. Or it's your own family. It's a family that you create. You get married. You have kids. But what is home? Well, and also, again, obviously, it's that house you grew up in, or an apartment, or a place that your parents were, usually a place that your parents were, or a place that you created. But if you're nomadic, or if you, or even if you grew up in a place like that, or if you're like me and kind of nomadic and don't feel that you can quite attach yourself to a home or a family, no matter what's being offered to you or how good it is, and that's a sad thing. Really, wherever there is love and security, this is where I'm saying that wherever there is love and wherever there is security, where there are people there who are happy to see you, no matter who they are. They could be people that you didn't grow up with, that you're not related to. It could be anything. It could, and your house, your home, it could be like a shack. It could be you could be sleeping, you know, in a shack somewhere built up against the side of a wall someplace, or underneath a highway or a railroad bridge, along with a bunch of other people, and you have these things in common, and you're a community. Or you could be living in a mansion, you know, and or maybe you grew up in one. Or whether you're having a big family dinner, or even if you're just hanging around on a corner on a park bench. There are people in the park across the street from me who know each other, and who, you know, some of them live in single room occupancy. They're poor and they don't have much to do in their lives, but they look forward to being with their friends that they've known for decades, going out to that park, sometimes winter and sometimes and certainly in summer and spring. So I'm saying, I guess, wherever there is love, wherever there is a sense of community, wherever there is a sense of people accepting you, no matter who you are or what you do, that's home. That's family.